So with more than half a century of hindsight, what should we make of the Allied firebombing of Japanese and German cities? That is the question the British philosopher A.C. Grayling poses in his book Among the Dead Cities. Grayling says the carpet bombing of civilians started in the German city of Hamburg.
These raids, rather aptly called Operation Gomorrah, took place in late July, early August 1943. They were the first really, really major raids that had a devastating effect on a big German city, Hamburg. And the RAF, who carried out these series of raids at night, mixed up their bomb loads with about 75% incendiary bombs against 25% high explosives. And the result was to cause a terrifying firestorm in Hamburg, which on the second night of the raids killed somewhere in the region of about 45,000 people, many of whom were asphyxiated to death in cellars because the firestorm took all the oxygen out of the air. And this effect was deliberately planned for because the aim of the area bombing campaign, the deliberate systematic massacre bombing of civilians, was to kill and terrorize as many civilians as possible.
How did they come to the decision to make this kind of bombing raid? It was the first of its kind.
Well, it was almost the first of its kind, yes. And what happened was that right at the very beginning of the war, the British government and the United States government were both quite determined that they would not deliberately and systematically attack civilian populations. In fact, President Roosevelt, at the outbreak of war, asked both the British government and, in fact, the German government to give an undertaking to that effect. And both governments did. The German government, the Nazi government, were very quick to break that undertaking because of their bombing of Warsaw and Rotterdam. But the British government stuck to it until February of 1942. That's really quite far into the war. And the reason why they switched policy was because their efforts prior to then had proved extremely ineffective and very costly. It turned out to be difficult, if not impossible indeed, to pick out precise targets at nighttime.
Still, there is a difference between the inability to distinguish between targets and civilian populations and the deliberate decision to bomb civilian populations.
Yes, that's exactly right, Jim. And this change of policy in February 1942 was in its way a very shocking one. And it was met, by the way, by a considerable resistance in Britain. There was a committee called the Committee Against Night Bombing that protested against this change of strategy. Lots of questions were asked in Parliament. And perhaps most famously of all, a bishop in the House of Lords, Bishop Bell of Chichester, said, "We're fighting barbarians, but why are we behaving like them too?"
Even Churchill, I gather, had some reservations about this.
Yes, he did. In 1943, he was looking at some footage that had been taken by RAF bombers, showing the pulsing fires down below them in the cities. And he leapt to his feet and he said, "My God, are we animals?" He said, he used that phrase, "Are we animals that we are carrying out this kind of raid?" And right at the end of the war, on the 28th of March 1945, he sent a memo to the Royal Air Force saying, "The terror bombing," that was his phrase, "the terror bombing of the German cities must stop. The attack on Dresden is a very serious query against our conduct."
But still, to go back, the first of these in some ways was instigated by the so-called barbarians, by the Germans, by the Nazis. The bombing during the Blitz, you know, there is this question. Some years ago I read a book by Rick Atkinson, Army at Dawn, in which the thing I remember most is that he said the American army went into North Africa unable to really perform as an army until they learned to hate the enemy. That stuck with me in part because I can see how, having suffered from the bombing, having suffered from the attacks, people in the throes of hate will make decisions they might otherwise not.
Well, I think there are two points there. One is that the British government had all during the war a polling, sort of an official polling organisation called the Mass Observation Unit that kept its finger on the pulse of the population to see how morale was bearing up. And they asked people in the bombed cities of London and Bristol and elsewhere whether they thought that retaliation attacks should be carried out against the German cities. And majorities of people in cities that had been bombed said no, whereas majorities of people in cities that weren't bombed said yes. In fact, the unbombed cities were much more enthusiastic about bombing the enemy population than those who had experienced the horror of being bombed. So that's one point. The other point is that in the conduct of a war, over weeks and months and years, planning to build aircraft and bombs, carrying out strategy, looking at maps, studying them carefully, picking targets, it's all done very coolly and rationally. It's not a question of hate, really. Planning to attack a city in the hope of killing as many of its residents as possible. That is something which is done with a kind of coolness and rationality, which in a way is rather chilling.
What was the point, then, in doing this? The men who planned it must have assumed that it would have, what, a propaganda effect on the German civilization to destroy so viciously so many civilians?
It was believed by Sir Arthur Harris, who was head of Bomber Command, and by a man called Sir Charles Portal, who was head of the Royal Air Force in general, that bombing was a war-winning weapon. They thought that if they could terrorise and hurt the enemy population sufficiently, it would buckle, its morale would collapse, and it wouldn't be able to continue conducting the war, supporting its troops, working in the factories. And it was odd that they thought that because, of course, the experience of the Blitz in Britain had been quite the reverse. What bombing, conventional bombing, did was that it increased morale. You know, it stiffened the upper lip. So this idea that a population could be terrorised by conventional bombing turned out to be false. And more to the point, it also turned out not to have the effect on the war economy of Germany that Bomber Command hoped. They thought that they would disrupt industrial production enough to make things more difficult for Germany to continue the war. But what it had been affected by, very interestingly, was tactical bombing, precision bombing of oil supplies and coal supplies and transport links. And that kind of bombing had been carried out not by the RAF, but by the United States Army Air Force, the mighty 8th based in England, and the 15th based in Italy. And some economists have suggested that if the attacks on the cities hadn't happened, but instead the attack had been focused on these crucial industrial and transport links, the war could have been shorter.
That isn't the end of the story, however. The Americans learned the lesson from the RAF. When it came time to make these same sort of decisions in Japan.
Yes, this is the tragedy of the case, really, that the tactics adopted by the United States Army Air Force in the Pacific theater of the war were 180 degrees different from how they'd behaved in the European theater. The 21st Bomb Group, under the command of General Curtis LeMay, I think a famous name here, instead of attacking fuel and military targets and transport targets, what Curtis LeMay did was to say to his airmen, strip the guns out of your B-29s and load them up with incendiaries and indiscriminately bomb the Japanese cities and burn them to the ground. In fact, this had been planned for because at the Dugway Proving Grounds in Utah, near Salt Lake City, wooden Japanese-style houses had been built and various kinds of incendiary bombs had been tried out on them, and they used the ones that were most effective. And the result was devastating. On the night of the 9th-10th of March 1945, Tokyo was firebombed, and something like 85,000 people died in a single night as a result.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? In fact, as I understand it, there may have been more destruction of people in Tokyo by the firebombing than we know of from the atom bombs.
That is correct, yes. The immediate casualty figures for Tokyo were higher than either Hiroshima or Nagasaki, although, of course, in those two cities, deaths continued for many, many years afterwards because of radiation sickness. And Curtis LeMay himself said in 1945, he said, and I quote him, "We baked and boiled and burned more people in that one night in Tokyo than in either of the atom bomb attacks."
At the end of your book, you are clearly in the column that suggests this was a moral crime and that there are lessons for us to learn. Do you feel as though these lessons have been learned by the people who need to learn them?
Well, in a way, yes, because if you look at what's happened since the Second World War, rather quietly, those organizations that are involved in the setting up of international conventions and international laws have made repeated and finally successful efforts to outlaw deliberate attacks on civilian populations. And there's an interesting story, this, because in 1949, this is after the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights and other responses to the Holocaust and to the horrors of the Second World War, 1949, the Fourth Geneva Convention on the Protection of Civilians in Times of War was agreed by the international community, except for one very, very significant thing, and that is that the drafters of that convention tried to put in clauses which would outlaw bombing of civilian populations. But the British and the Americans refused to accept those clauses because to do so would have been an immediate retrospective admission of guilt. And it wasn't until 1977 that a protocol was added to the 1949 convention outlawing attacks on civilian populations. The British government signed that convention. To this day, the United States government has not done so.
A.C. Grayling. He's a philosopher at the University of London. His book is called Among the Dead Cities.